We're going to finish John chapter 4 today in the Belief Project. And then, like I said, we're going to pull out next Sunday for a few weeks and talk about the church. And then we'll jump back into the Belief Project in the weeks to come. I love John chapter 4 because we've been able to lean into some very real-life stories as Jesus has had conversation with real-life people, as he does throughout John's gospel. And we spent 3 weeks looking at his conversation with the Samaritan woman. And then today's story is very different than the story of the Samaritan woman, but one that we definitely want to lean into and listen as Jesus interacts with a desperate father. I understand at some level what this father was going through. The child that does not make the stories of her dad the most in my family is my middle daughter, Reagan. You rarely hear me tell a story about Reagan because she's the middle child like I am. I'm kind of laid back and not as active many times as her older or younger. And so she kind of is the one that flies under the radar. But there is one story about Reagan that you need to hear about today. She decided that she wanted to learn to ride a horse, and so we gave her that opportunity. And so she mounted the horse and started riding this beautiful, slick horse and was doing fine till she started getting a little afraid and felt like she was losing her grip. And so she reached to grab the mane of the horse and just could not quite hold on to the mane, and she was falling out of the saddle and reaching desperately for the mane of the horse, and then her feet got kind of caught up in the stirrups, and the next thing I know, Reagan, who is my blonde child, is falling off of the horse. And as a father, I'm starting to feel this sense of desperation as I watch her fall to the ground with her feet still caught in the stirrups. And honestly, if the manager of Walmart had not come out and unplugged that machine, I don't know what would have happened to my precious Reagan. You ever had a feeling of desperation over someone that you love? Maybe their life is on the line. Maybe they are sick, but you have a feeling that is outside of your control of desperation. You ever been in a real life situation that's not a joke of someone that you love that is potentially their life is being threatened? You ever had the life of a loved one in jeopardy? There's a feeling of desperation that you really can't describe in those moments, right? Desperation for that person that you love whose life is now in jeopardy. It's in those moments that people often call out to God or reach out to God. Sometimes we call that foxhole faith. I think it comes from the little cliche that there are no atheists in foxholes. We kind of understand what that means, that in moments of desperation when your life is on the line, then those tend to be the moments that people, regardless of their religious history, turn to some type of higher power, some type of God, call out to some type of God if they have or have not professed belief in him in the past. And we call that foxhole faith. But true faith is not really found in the foxhole, is it? The test of faith is not in the foxhole. The test of faith is when we're safely outside the foxhole. When we're living everyday normal life, when things are not in jeopardy. And the story in our text today is of a desperate father whose son is dying. And we're gonna walk through this text together, and then we're going to make some key observations in our day and age from this text about Jesus and about miracles and signs. That's an important conversation in the kind of landscape of the church today. So first, let's kind of walk through the text together. We'll jump in John 4 and verse 43. After the 2 days, he departed for Galilee. So he had been in this hostile territory, Samaria, for 2 days. If you missed the last few weeks, go back and listen to the podcast or whatever and get caught up about Jesus' interaction with this Samaritan woman. He was in a place he should not have been according to all the cultural norms of his day, but he had a divine appointment and he leads this Samaritan woman on a spiritual journey of redemption. And then she drops everything that she has and goes into the city and pulls all of her Samaritan friends out to have this conversation with Jesus. And he ends up with his disciples there for 2 days. Verse 44, Jesus himself had testified that a prophet has no honor in his hometown. So John kind of throws this parenthesis in here to say it's ironic that Jesus was welcomed in Samaria because he was not even welcome in his hometown. And then 45 is a little bit strange because it seems to contradict 44. Look what 45 says. So when he came to Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. Seems to be contradictory to 44. The prophet doesn't find honor in his hometown, but then in 45, the Galileans welcomed him. But here's the rest of the story. Having seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the feast, for they too had gone to the feast. And so John introduces us to this idea that Jesus has no honor, no respect, no regard among his hometown, but they did welcome him. So here's the catch in this. They welcomed Jesus as a miracle worker, as someone that could feed their hungry souls, as someone that could open blinded eyes, as someone that could work miracles. But they did not accept him for who he truly was, which was the Messiah, the Savior. So they view Jesus as this miracle worker. And we're kind of introduced to this concept that's going to be important in John's gospel that I'll just call sign-based belief. Their belief was based on the miracles of Jesus, the signs of Jesus, that he could open blinded eyes and he could feel hungry stomachs. Their belief in Jesus was limited to the miracles that Jesus could perform. They almost treated him like a magician, like a genie that would come out and do what they wanted him to do and then go back to his magic little vase or his little bottle. And so that's how they treated Jesus. And again, we picked up on this in chapter 1. Let me just reread verses 11 and 12 of 1. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. So his own people rejected him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So even in verse 12, we're introduced to this concept of believing in Jesus beyond just the surface miracles, the signs and the wonders and the miracles. And so, again, this is common in John's gospel for Jesus to only be embraced based on his miracles as a miracle worker or a magician, and not as the Savior of the world. Verse 46. So he came again to Cana in Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And at Capernaum, there was an official whose son was ill. And so Jesus returns to the site of his very first recorded miracle in John's gospel when he turned the water into wine. If you remember that story that we looked at several weeks ago now, it was a joyous occasion. It was a wedding, and Jesus was celebrating. We see the exact opposite in his second miracle in this same area. We see a father who is desperate. We see a foxhole faith. It's an entirely different situation. An official with a sick child. Now, is there anything more difficult in life than trying to wrap your mind around a child being sick? We see children that have cancer or what seems to be incurable diseases or go through extremely difficult things, and particularly if you're a parent, is there anything more difficult than trying to understand the sickness or potential death of a child? Like that's the most difficult seasons of life, isn't it? Like to try to wrap your mind around that. So we're introduced to a real-life father who is a leader, an official, but that didn't really matter, did it? It didn't matter how many men he led. It didn't matter who he's in charge of. It didn't matter his title. The reality of his life is he had a sick son, a desperately ill child, a desperately ill son. Important man? Yes. Military leader? Absolutely. But a father who was desperate because of his real life situation. So again, we're introduced into a conversation with Jesus and a real life person. It was a religious person in John chapter 3 with Nicodemus. It was an immoral person in John chapter 4 with the Samaritan woman. And now it's a person of high ranking military status, a person of power, a person that was used to being in charge, a person that was accustomed to giving orders that were obeyed, a person that was accustomed to people following him. but a man who had a desperately ill child. Verse 47. When this man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to Jesus. He went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son. For, we're introduced to kind of this next level of sickness, for he was at the point of death. Man, John introduces us to the depth of this situation. Now I love that Jesus is compassionate toward all types of people, religious people, immoral people, and in this case, a desperate father who has a deathly ill child. All types of people we're introduced to that Jesus loves and reaches out to. But in this situation, it's a father who has a child that's about to die. My son, Zach, was born into the world in a very kind of traumatic way. His mother had placenta previa, which if you're a medical person, you know what that is. And the danger of that is if the mother begins to hemorrhage, which happened with her. And before we knew it, both her life and the life of Zach were in jeopardy. It was about 5 or 6 weeks before he was supposed to be born. And so he was born into the world in kind of that traumatic little window of time where they had this much time to get in and do an emergency C-section before both the life of the mom and the child, in this case, Zach, both of their lives were in danger. And so I remember the feeling of helplessness, because it all happened so fast, of being the dad and the husband standing in the waiting room with no one had gotten there yet. And all they had done is taken Zach and his mother back into the emergency area. And there I was, like, in a desperate moment. And I remember those foxhole prayers in that moment of, God, how desperate I feel right now and helpless you feel right now. And here's that father in that same state of mind of desperation where he hears of this miracle worker, Jesus, who's now in his territory. And he knows Jesus may be the only hope, the last resort for his child to be saved. And so he does what most fathers would do. He does whatever he can to save the life of his child. And so he goes to Jesus and he has this mindset, if I can just get Jesus to come, if I can just get Jesus to come, last resort, final hope, only hope. Now, I love how Jesus responds to desperation. Jesus doesn't look down on the guy. He doesn't say, well, look, the only reason you're coming to me is because I'm like your last shot here. Like, Jesus doesn't respond to desperation with hard-heartedness. He doesn't respond to desperation with frustration. He doesn't respond to desperation with an I told you so smug attitude, does he? Jesus responds to desperation with compassion. Man, that's a powerful truth. That Jesus, even in our moments of desperation, if we have ignored him, if we have turned and done our own deal, if we've sought every path outside of Jesus, and then Jesus is our last resort, even in those moments, the response of Jesus is one of compassion, one of healing, one of redemption. And so Jesus responds in compassion. And this is a repeated theme throughout the gospel. It was four desperate friends that brought their friend on a stretcher to Jesus and tore the roof off of a house and lowered their sick buddy down in front of Jesus. It was desperation, and Jesus responded to that desperation. It was the desperation of another Roman official whose daughter was dying that went to Jesus and said, if I can just get Jesus to come. It was his desperation that Jesus responded to in compassion. It was a woman that was dying of an issue of blood that had for 12 years fought this battle, and in her mind said, if I can just touch the hem of the garment of Jesus, the healer, then everything will be okay. And Jesus responded to her desperation in compassion. It was a desperate blind man that, when the crowd told him to be quiet and not bother Jesus, cried out at the top of his lungs, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And the crowd said, Bartimaeus, be quiet. No one wants to hear from you. Jesus is busy. Stay away from Jesus. And Bartimaeus, in his desperation, screams out above the crowd, and Jesus responds in compassion to his desperation. It's time and time and time again throughout the story of Jesus that desperate people come to Jesus and Jesus responds to desperation with compassion. That's good news for you. That's good news for me. The gospel is the good news for desperate people, that Jesus responds with compassion to people in desperation. And Jesus is the true answer to desperation. The question for us is to whom or to what do we tend to turn during our moments of desperation? Remember the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks? FedEx employee that his plane goes down and he's washed ashore as the only sole survivor on this island. No one knows he's there. And the only thing he has is what washes ashore with him. And there was one thing he found in a package that became his best friend. It was a volleyball with a bloody handprint on it, whose name was what? Wilson. I find it ironic in the movie Castaway that Tom Hanks' character is never portrayed as crying out to God. He never prays. He never seeks a higher source. He puts all of his hope and confidence in a volleyball that he names Wilson. And we kind of understand that desperate moment and looking for companionship, and we kind of laugh at Wilson. But in our minds, we have to think, like, it's silly to put your hope in a volleyball. It's a volleyball. It's a volleyball. Can't do anything but get spiked. It's silly to put your hope in a volleyball, but I ask myself the question, like, what are my Wilsons of life? Like, what do I turn? To whom do I turn? Because while it appears silly for us to put hope in something inanimate like a volleyball in our times of desperation, don't we do the same thing? Like, maybe it's not a volleyball. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a habit or an addiction or a person. We tend to put our faith and hope in things that cannot bring us fulfillment, that cannot sustain us, that cannot cure our desperation. We tend to put it in relationships or people or things or stuff or our bank accounts or so many things. So such a long list of things that we could create that we tend to put our faith and trust in. Our Wilsons of life. And this man was desperate, and he realized his only hope was in Jesus, which might explain the response of Jesus in verse 48, which when we read it, let's be honest, does come across a little abrupt. So Jesus said to him, "Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." So this guy comes desperately to Jesus, pleads with Jesus to come back with him, and Jesus looks at him and says, "Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." This reaction from Jesus seems almost harsh, and Jesus is addressing a subject here, this kind of signs and wonders belief. And Jesus is saying this superficial, shallow, sign-based belief is inadequate. It's inadequate because it's self-focused. What can I get out of Jesus? This signs and wonders based belief. Now, the little word "you" here, we in our English language, you see the word "you." You don't always know if it's singular or plural, whether it's you as a person or you as a group. This word "you" is a plural. So Jesus is saying this to the crowd. So no doubt when this man came to Jesus, there was a large crowd of people that began to gather because Jesus, remember, they saw him as a miracle worker, and they thought maybe we're going to get to see the next trick. Maybe Jesus is going to heal someone and do something cool that we can tell our friends about and post on social media. And Jesus says, look, your signs and wonder-based belief is inadequate. It's not true belief. You see, lots of people believe as long as God is working in our favor. As long as God's on my side. As long as God's on my team, then I'll believe. I heard the story recently of a family. They had a daughter. She was in her early 20s, and she became desperately ill, and there was nothing that they could do. They literally said that your daughter's going to pass away in a certain amount of time. And the the family that had been very unfaithful in church and their commitment to Jesus began to seek help. They began to call in pastors and prayer, and the pastor of the church that they did attend on occasion came in, and they began to pray and tune their hearts into God and began to really seek God's healing and believe that God would heal their daughter. And sure enough, in that situation, God chose to heal, and she was healed. And the doctors couldn't explain it, and they just said there is no reason why, you know, outside maybe of your faith or what you believe. There's no medical or scientific explanation, but your daughter is healed. And so guess what? Next Sunday, that family was all sitting near the front of the church, and they were there and committed, and they were there week two and week three and week four, and then by the third month, there was fewer and fewer of the family members, and within 1 year's time, the family was completely out of church, and suddenly there was an explanation for the healing outside of faith. Well, maybe the medicine, or maybe this, or maybe that. Because again, in our moments of desperation, our foxhole faith, we often seek signs and wonders belief, don't we? Well, signs and wonders belief is not lasting and authentic belief. But look at this man's story, verse 49. The official said to him, "Sir," like his command here to Jesus, "come down before my child dies." Jesus said to him, "Go, your son will live." The man believed, look at this, the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. This father's resolved, isn't he? He's determined. He orders Jesus to come with him. Jesus, come with me. Now, this man's used to giving orders. He's used to giving orders and those orders being obeyed. He's used to commanding. This man is used to being in control. You get that? This man is used to when he says something, people snap. People get into line. People do what he says. He's used to being the guy in charge. You can see it in what he says to Jesus. "Jesus, come down with me." Not, "Hey, Jesus, look, my son is desperately dying. I really need you to come. Would you consider?" This guy like goes into full commando mode. "Jesus, come. You come down with me." He is used in his life context to giving orders and being in control. But Jesus complicates the situation, doesn't he? He makes it even more difficult. Jesus performs a long-distance cure. He says, "Go, and your son will live. I'm not coming with you, but I need you to go, and your son will live." Don't miss this part of the message. Trusting Jesus does not always fit within my preferred methods, within my preferred comfort zone. Trusting Jesus sometimes forces me to not be in control, but give up control. This guy's used to being in control. He's used to being in command. Jesus says to him, "I'm not coming with you. Go. And your son will live." Jesus is not looking for short-lived, superficial acceptance based on some temporary miracle, is he? He's not looking for some kind of head nod based on his temporary fix of my needs and wants. Jesus is not looking for a faith that as long as God's in my corner, as long as things are going my way, then I'm a Jesus follower. Jesus was asking this man, who is used to being in control, "Will you trust me? Will you trust me? Will you trust me? I'm not coming with you, but will you trust me? Will you trust me during your pain? Will you trust me during your feelings and moments of desperation? Will you trust me when the answers are not clear? Will you trust me when you can't see a way out? Will you trust me?" Will you trust me when you can't feel me by your side? Will you trust me when it doesn't seem like I'm walking with you? Will you trust me when I'm asking you to walk this path without my presence in a literal sense, right? Will you trust me in your moments of desperation and hurt and pain? Will you trust me when it's not in your control? Will you trust me when it looks like it's impossible? Will you trust me when you can't control it? Will you trust me? Man, can you imagine how long this walk home was for this guy? He had a long walk, didn't he? Jesus said, I'm not coming with you. Your son's going to live, but I'm going to need you to go home by yourself, and I need you to trust me that what I say, that my word is enough. Will you trust me? I can't imagine the mental wrestling that this guy went through as he walked home. Will I trust Jesus when it doesn't make, I can't see. He's not going to touch my son. He's not going to be there to heal him. He's not going to lay his hand. I mean, this guy knew of the miracles that Jesus performed. He knew how it worked. He had saw it happen. He saw people come to Jesus. He saw Jesus touch the blinded eyes and heal people. He saw Jesus being present and healing people. And now Jesus has said, I'm not coming with you, but will you trust me? You're not in control here, but will you trust me? Long walk home for this guy. And all he had was the word of Jesus. All this guy could do was cling to Jesus. Lots of think time, lots of processing time. Will I trust Jesus? I love the phrase that John uses here. He believed the word Jesus spoke to him. There's a difference in truth-based faith and signs-based faith. Truth-based faith, the word of Jesus, who Jesus is, who God is, versus miracles, signs, looking for something superficial. All this desperate father had to cling to was the word of Jesus. And the challenge for you and me is, will I trust Jesus? Will I take him at his word, even when it doesn't make sense? Even when I can't see clearly, will I trust him? Will I trust his word? 51, as he was going down, his servants met him. So the servants are running out to him and told him that his son was recovering. So he asked them the hour when he began to get better. And they said to him, yesterday at the seventh hour, the fever left him. And the father knew that that was the hour when Jesus had said to him, your son will live. And he himself believed, and all his household. This was the second sign that Jesus did when he had come from Judea to Galilee. So these servants, they come running out to meet this desperate father with good news. Your son is better. And they start doing the math. When did it get better? When did the fever leave? And that when they do the math, they realize it was at the exact time that Jesus had said, your son will live. Did you know God's timing is always right, even when I don't know it, even when I can't see it, even when I have to, after the fact, look back on the math of God. God's timing is always right, even when I don't know it and can't see it. And this son had been healed in the exact moment that Jesus had proclaimed it. And his belief in Jesus was authenticated, right? He believed. It was authenticated faith based on the word of Jesus and then his son being healed. And then, much like the Samaritan woman, this faith begins to spread. He believed, and all of his household believe. I love that Jesus meets us right in our life context. If we're a religious person, like in John 3, Jesus meets us in our self-righteousness and calls us to faith in him. If we're in an immoral stage of life, or we are far from God, like the Samaritan woman, Jesus meets us at that place in life. If we're the desperate father who can't see a way out, Jesus meets us in our desperation with compassion. He meets us in our season, in our stage of life, if that's religious or sin or desperation. And then John tells us this is the second sign. We'll see multiple signs through John's gospel, but we have said when we see this word sign that a sign is always pointing us toward Jesus, who Jesus is, for the purpose of generating belief in our hearts, that it's always pointing us to Jesus. Now, I want to make a couple of observations here about this story. One, I want us to make some observations about who Jesus is. I've already said it and emphasized it, that this story reminds us that Jesus is compassionate. He understands emotions. He understands hurt. He understands pain. He understands desperation. And he responds with compassion. Even when his plan is unclear, he responds with compassion. In that culture, sons had a unique value in their family. Again, different culture in which we live, but for a Jewish male, they took a lot of pride in their sons because that was carrying on their bloodline, their lineage. There was a lot of depth of value to having sons. This son is valuable to this father. And so this father is desperate. So here's the challenge. Don't miss this about this story. Am I willing to trust Jesus with the things that are most valuable in my life? Do I really trust Jesus with what's most valuable to my heart? Man, this is tough. Like, this is real life stuff, right? As a parent, do I trust Jesus with what's most valuable to me? Do I trust him with my kids? I don't know the level at which this father's going through this. And Ash and I were talking about this morning. Like, that family that's lost a 17-year-old son. Like, how in that moment do you trust Jesus? Like, how do I trust Jesus with what is most valuable to me? With my kid? How do I take my control off of the things most valuable to me as a parent, my children? How do I take my control off and trust Jesus with them? How do I trust Jesus with them? If you're like me as a parent, it's like, I want to control it. I want them to make the best decisions. I want to set them up for success and not failure. I want to speak truth into their life, and I want to lead them by example. I want to do everything that I can do as a parent to point them to Jesus and get them to Jesus and help them to live solid, what in our minds is stable lives. I want to do all those things, but at the end of the day, I can't control it, can I? And so there's a level that I have to say, Jesus, I trust you with what's most valuable in my life. And it may not be kids, as if you're not a parent or there's other things in your life. Maybe it's that relationship or that job or whatever it may be. Will I trust Jesus with what is most valuable? And it's really Jesus asking us that question, isn't it? It's Jesus saying to us, will you trust me? Will you trust me with what's most valuable to you? Will you trust me? Will you trust me with it? Jesus is compassionate even when people misunderstand his purposes, even when people wish to exploit him for their own agenda, like we see all throughout John's gospel. People tend to treat Jesus like Aladdin's genie. They tend to want Jesus when they rub the lamp of life and something's going on in their lives. They want to be able to rub the lamp, and they want Jesus to come to their rescue. And we want to treat Jesus like he's this kind of cosmic bellhop, that he'll jump through my hoops, that he'll do what I want him to do. It's almost like that feeling you get sometimes as a parent, like you want your kids to want you beyond just, Dad, I need money for gas, or I need, something's wrong with my car and I need it fixed. You want your kids to want to spend time with you and hang out with you, and you want them to love you and need you and want to spend time with you outside of just needing something. Teenagers. Jesus is not Aladdin's genie. He's not our cosmic bellhop. Man, we are so quick to blame God or question God when things do not go according to my plan. And he's long-suffering and patient and compassionate when that happens, isn't he? His compassion extends beyond my wants, my needs, my desires. It extends beyond what I can see, what I can know. It's deeper than I can even understand. Jesus is not a magician. He's not a genie. He's not a cosmic bellhop. He is sovereign. He is compassionate. He is patient. He can be trusted. Man, the story teaches us about who Jesus is, but it also teaches us, and I don't want to miss this, it teaches us about faith and miracles, faith and signs. This was the kind of relevant question for our day and age that came to my mind as I was processing through this passage. What are the advantages and disadvantages of a faith that is based on spectacular things, miracles, signs and wonders? Jesus answers that question for us. If our faith is just based on the spectacular, what are the advantages and disadvantages of that? Well, look what he said in verse 48 again. Jesus said to him, "Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." Jesus gives us the answer to sign-based, miracle-based faith. Sign-based faith is rarely authentic. It's rarely lasting. Miracles have a limited scope and usefulness. Now, miracles were a natural part of the ministry of Jesus, weren't they? You know why they were a natural part of the ministry of Jesus? Because a supernatural God invaded a natural world, brought the supernatural with him. And so miracles were a natural part of the ministry of Jesus because you had a supernatural God entering a natural world. Space. And so miracles were a natural result in the ministry of Jesus. And the Gospels are clear. Miracles did lead some people to faith in Jesus, but not most people. Most people got fascinated with the miracle and they missed the point of the miracle, which was to point them to Jesus, because Jesus is more than just a miracle worker. And his expectations are higher. His call is to believe in who he is. That he is king, that he is savior, that he is the son of God, that he wants control of our life, that he is the way of salvation. This desperate father wants a miracle. What does Jesus do? He places himself between the request of this man and this man's healing, or the son's healing. Jesus puts himself between this guy's desire for a miracle and the healing of the son. Jesus places himself right in between, and he says, you want healing, you're desperate, you want a sign. The only way that's truly going to happen and authentically happen is through who I am. I need you to trust me in a way that's outside your control. You want this, but the only way you're going to get to here is by trusting me in a way that's outside of your control. This teaches us so much about faith and miracles. This man had to exercise authentic faith while walking home. Get this. Walking home without what he so desperately wanted. He had a long walk home, didn't he? He was expecting Jesus to be with him. He was expecting to bring Jesus back to the party, back to the bedside, back to the home where a great party was going to happen because Jesus was going to heal his son. Everything about this guy's plan gets flipped on its head when Jesus says, you're going to walk home alone because you've got to exercise authentic faith that I can heal your son while never being with him physically. You can't control this one. And so here's this guy walking home without anything he so desperately wanted, out of his control. All he could do was do what? Walk and trust. That's all he could do. He couldn't sprint all the way home, could he? He'd be winded. He'd be tired. He would give up. He had to walk step by step, one foot in front of the other, And he had to trust. Will I trust him? Will I trust him? Will I trust him? Will I trust him with what is most valuable to me? Can Jesus be trusted? Even when he doesn't give me what I so desperately want. What is that? Some of you so desperately want a relationship, but you seem to always end up in the wrong ones. And you desperately want. Can Jesus be trusted when he doesn't give me a relationship? Am I going to go searching and scrambling and trying to figure it out for myself? Am I going to try to make a relationship happen when I know it's not healthy for me? I shouldn't be in it. Am I going to try to make it happen on my own? Or can I trust Jesus with my relationships? What about my kids? Can I trust Jesus with my kids, the things that are most valuable to me? Can I trust Jesus with my spouse? Can I trust Jesus with my children? Can I trust Jesus with my financial security? Can I trust Jesus with my job? Can I trust Jesus with my house? Can I trust Jesus with my healing? Can Jesus be trusted even when he doesn't give me what I so desperately want? The root struggle in our sinful nature, our fallen capacity, one of the root struggles that we have is to receive and accept things that do not profit us or benefit us and know they're from God. Did you get that? One of the root struggles in our fallen state, our fallen capacity, is can I accept what God is doing for me when it does not benefit me or profit me in any way? Can I accept that those things are from God? Can I accept that the things that don't go my way are from God? Can I accept when I don't get my way is from God? Can I accept the good and the bad as if it is from God? Who's the classic example of this? It is a guy named Job, right? That God took everything, allowed the enemy to take everything away from Job. All of his security, his relationships, his children. He suffered more than you and I will ever face in our lives. He suffered death and pain and hurt and everything multiplied by 100, more difficult than anything we will ever face. And what was Job's challenge? Job's challenge is, at the end of the day, God, I don't get it. I don't understand it. But what I know is you give and you take away. Blessed is your name. When I can't hashtag blessed because my world is falling apart, can God be trusted in those moments? Now we look for those hashtag moments, don't we? We look for being able to throw something on social media, hashtag blessed, because I got a raise or I'm going on vacation or something went my way. But what about the rest of life? When I don't have anything positive to say because my world's falling apart, can God be trusted in those moments too? In John's gospel, the true signs, like light, they reveal who we are. Jesus told us that in chapter 3 and verse 19 when he was talking with Nicodemus. He said, this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people love the darkness rather than the light because their deeds are evil. The signs, the light in John's gospel, they reveal who we really are. They reveal the darkness. They reveal who God is. They reveal our selfish attempts to use God for our agenda. Can God be trusted when I don't get my way? Is he faithful? Is he loving? Is he forgiving? Is he trustworthy? Is he reliable? Even when he doesn't seem to be that way, even when it doesn't make sense to me. You ever had that moment in life where you scratched your head and thought, God doesn't seem very loving right now? God doesn't seem reliable right now. Can God be trusted in those moments of desperation? You see, signs and miracles are not a reliable foundation to build our faith upon. Even when we attribute those miracles to Jesus, they're not reliable foundations. Only Jesus is the sure foundation. all good things, all miracles, all signs, they don't point to the miracle. They point to Jesus. Trust Jesus. If the miracle comes, trust Jesus. If the miracle doesn't come, trust Jesus. If my world falls apart, trust Jesus. If there's no bailout for me, trust Jesus. If my child doesn't recover, trust Jesus. If my bank account doesn't fill up, trust Jesus. If I don't keep the job, trust Jesus. If my relationships fall apart, can I trust Jesus? Let's end with this. Luke 16 is an interesting story about a rich guy and a guy named Lazarus. There's always discussion whether it's a literal story or a parable. At the end of the day, the heart of the story is what's most important, whether it's a real story or a parable that Jesus was telling. But there's this conversation that happens between heaven and hell. The rich man dies and goes to hell. Lazarus dies and goes to heaven. The text says he was sitting in the bosom of Abraham. He was at a place of peace. And so this conversation ensues between heaven and hell. And the rich man, who is pictured in hell, pleads with Abraham and Lazarus. He pleads for someone from the dead to return to earth and bring the good news, bring the story back to those who are still alive. Remember this? The rich man's like, man, if we could just send someone back from the dead, not the walking dead, but like if we can send someone back from the dead, if someone could leave hell and go back to earth, then everybody would be persuaded. Remember what Abraham said? Even if someone came back from the dead, they would not believe. Even if a person on earth were given every sign, even to the point that someone came back from the dead, they still would not believe. What does that mean? Don't you scratch your head and say, man, if a dead dude showed up, I think I'd believe. The spiritual truth of that is that human ability without God's intervention to seek after God, to identify with Jesus, to worship God, that human ability to do any of those things, to establish relationship with God, our human ability is entirely broken. It was true in Galilee when Jesus performed miracles, and it's true today. Because signs and miracles are not about signs and miracles. They're about Jesus. You feel compassion for this father? It's a parent's worst nightmare, isn't it? A dying child. Helpless. Desperate. Optimistic, but doubtful. Hopeful, but human. If I can just get Jesus to come with me. Can you hear him? Can you see him? If I can just get Jesus to come. If I can just get Jesus to come, he'll be better. If I can just get Jesus to come. Going against the Jesus, it's not what he expects. Jesus says, I'm asking you to believe from a distance. I'm not going to be there. Well, now the situation is different, isn't it? It's deeper. It's more complicated. It's more difficult than he imagined. And he's walking home. Will I trust in who Jesus is? Will I take him at his word? Can Jesus be trusted? Can I trust him? And John's really asking us the same question throughout his gospel and in this story. Will you trust in who Jesus is? Will you believe in who he is? Will you believe when it doesn't make sense? Will you believe when it's difficult? Will you trust him with what's most valuable to you? Our faith is grounded in Jesus, in Jesus alone. It's not perfect faith, is it? It's authentic, it's real, it's raw. It's up, it's down, it's doubts and questions and insecurities. It's human, it's frail. And Jesus asks us through John's gospel, will you trust me? Will you trust me? Will you trust me? When it's hard, when it's difficult, will you trust me? Here's the gospel. Jesus can be trusted. Good and bad, joy and sorrow, easy and difficult, life and death, Jesus can be trusted. Will we trust him? Will we believe? Let's bow our heads for prayer.